So Replay is we consider it being the Swiss Army knife when it comes to video workflows. Before going through the key features, there's a slide that's missing. Thing is, we started 2 years ago, and we were able, luckily enough, to start on a white paper. We just thought about what would we need in terms of podcast production and video workflows. So we wanted at least 150 lectures per week recorded, and maybe more in a few years' time. We wanted no interference with the lecturer, so they should use their own laptop, they should not notice that they are being recorded, and all that stuff. The content should remain accessible more than 50 years from now, 50, which is a large number, I know, and we cannot guarantee it, I know that as well, but we try to. We wanted intelligent access to the content. You saw the numbers from Markus. Only 13% of the students wanted to watch the whole lecture. So that calls for some method or means to search for what you're looking for. And last but not least, we wanted to create an open and reusable system. And to just answer the question that would come up afterwards, we decided to build our own system because we looked at various other systems. And we found out that they didn't just come up to these expectations that I just brought up. So coming to the key features, lecture recording on a large scale. I told you about the 150 lectures per week. This, of course, includes a high degree of automation, because if you want to record 150 lectures per week, you need, not 150 students, but quite a lot. And labor is not cheap in Switzerland. We want access to intellectual content. That means we want to be able to search on the timeline within the videos to find the things we are interested in. So we want to get away from large chunks of data, 200, 1 gigabyte of data, download it, look through it, just to find the 2 seconds or 30 seconds we're interested in. Freedom of choice today and tomorrow sounds good. What does it mean? So it means that we are relying on a raw material archive. So we are trying to capture content at a very, very high quality. We store it at that quality, at least as long as we get storage from our storage guys. And this gives us the possibility to create distribution formats today and even tomorrow, and even maybe or hopefully within the 50 years I talked about before. So in 50 years' time, we will have different distribution formats. Maybe it's QuickTime, maybe it's not. Maybe it's Windows Media, maybe it's not. We don't know. But storing the raw material, we are quite sure we can produce tomorrow's distribution formats. Last but not least, leverage recorded knowledge. What does that mean? So if you think about thesis and PhD work and other important books, then usually end up with a huge list of references, citing ISBN numbers and maybe some web links. Problem with these web links is the user might move to another domain, he or she might delete the document, and there your reference is gone, and it's invalid. There are systems out there today that can solve these problems. They're called persistent identifier. I don't know if you are familiar with it. If not, it's an interesting topic. So we built this into our system, Replay, just to be able to, be able to cite the knowledge that's recorded in the videos. Coming to the soft facts, Replay is educated to empower standards. Standards are used in our sense to avoid dead ends. We don't want to end up with data we cannot read anymore, and we are sure that when using standards, we can at least transform it, exchange it, whatever. It's designed to scale. So today it's designed to work for these 150 lectures per week. Maybe in a few years' time you need more. So we designed it in a modular way, So we can just parallelize it by multiplying certain components within the system. It's separated to cooperate. So you can just take one of the components you're interested in. I already talked about that. We are trying to make content accessible on the timeline. So there's the indexing part in our system. Because it's all separated, you could just think about taking it out, maybe implanting it into your system, maybe replace functionality we built into it with your own module. It's developed to be extended, so we provided lots of hooks. We provided lots of documented APIs so that you can add your own functionality or talk to third-party systems like learning management systems, Sakai, Moodle, you name it. And for that reason, it's actually even better than a Swiss Army knife because you can add tools. And it's meant to be shared. That means Replay is, since April, it's open source, lesser GNU public license. So you can add it, you can download it, you can add things to it, and you can reuse it, alter it, whatever you like. So what's behind the scenes? It's was lots of talking now. Let's get to the system. The backend is written in Java. The nodes are running as Tomcat web applications. By nodes, I mean certain functionality in the system. We will come to that later. We are communicating using SOAP. That's web services for the non-technical people here. SOAP interfaces, they allow for communication with other systems, other platforms. So you don't have to use Java to connect to Replay. The workflow definition is using AND. AND is a build tool. If you're developing software, you might know AND. It's quite easy to write these workflow definitions. We don't have a visual editor like a podcast producer might get or might not. I don't know. In the lecture room, we have a device called Playmobil. It's standard PC hardware. We are going to get the cost low. It shouldn't be too expensive. It should easily be replaceable. VGA grabbing and analog video capturing cards are installed. We're recording in DV and MPEG-4 part 2. The system is quite easy. It's running Linux at the moment. We will be experimenting with macOS 10 as well. The scheduling application is more or less the only part we have written on our side. It's written in Python, so it should be running on macOS 10 as well. For the camera tracking, we are using a solution from the security sector by former Dynapel. So I'll do a very, very quick walkthrough through the system, so just that you get an idea of what we built and whether it might be useful to you or not. So we start at the acquisition part. The Playmobil I talked about, services it's providing, the automated recording, capturing of VGA and presenter video, including the automated tracking I was talking about. It has a live preview so that you can look at what it's actually recording. You can control it. You get indication of whether it's online, it's offline, it's working, it's recording, it's dead, whatever. It's scheduled using iCalendar feeds, which is a nice thing because if your application can provide these feeds, you can use our Playmobil to connect to your system. You don't have to use the Replay backend. Extension hooks, there's one big hook, which is called Linux and Python, so if you know how to develop software, go ahead. The material is uploaded by the Playmobil into the thing we call integrator. It's running the most services of the whole system. So the iCalendar schedule I was talking about, it's communicating and controlling the recorder devices. We have a Dropbox so that not only you can upload things using these recorders, but you can also upload files or harvest them from any other system. Just put them into the Dropbox and the system will work on them. The persistent identifier is also assigned in the integrator just at the beginning, so you get the identifier and you can follow your media through the whole system. In terms of interfaces, we have the scheduler. It's a general implementation at the moment. By the way, I can say that Replay Now currently consists of about 140,000 lines of code, which might be a lot, maybe it's not. But the main thing is there's not one single line of code referencing ETH Zurich at the moment. So it's all kept very general until the last end. We really want to make it reusable and usable for all of you. So that's why also the scheduling part is very general. You can add time slots just to initiate recording. Manual upload, I talked about that. Quality assurance and trimming interface. Once the bundle or the media is uploaded into the integrator, you get the chance to look at it and say, oh, that's fine, process it, or no, that's not fine, I want to do some cutting, I want to do some censorship, whatever. You can define media types. Since it's a whole workflow, here at the bottom, the encoding part comes. You all know that there's an endless number of formats, and maybe your encoder doesn't support all these formats, so you want to make sure that you only get in here what your encoder can process. Coming to the most interesting part, I'm afraid it's not too much information here. We are doing extraction of isochronic metadata. You'll see later what this is exactly for. Main thing here is that you can add indexation capabilities. So one example, we are analyzing the slides. So I will be able, after this recording, to look for indexation, and I will be pointed directly to this slide. If I showed pictures of you, of people, and you were able to write maybe a plugin that could recognize people from faces, you just add it to the indexer, it's a documented API, and then you can search for people, just to give you an idea. The archive is a very important thing for us. I talked about the 50 plus years. It's all about archive and metadata. So we provided a very, very simple archive. There's no repository added to it, but at the moment we don't feel we need one. We can talk about this offline, it's a hot topic. The composition part takes things out of the archive, runs them through FFmpeg, through the episode Telestream engine, through Apple's QuickTime to produce distribution formats. You can add trimming, you can add branding, you can add trailer and bumper, watermarks, just up to your imagination. The default download version of Replay contains a so-called command line encoder, which is currently using FFmpeg, so you can plug in very easily any encoding tool that runs in the command line. But as an example, we also integrated episodes Telestream. On the consumption side, we have here the store with the distribution formats. Here's the student or the lecturer or the guest. He or she will be using the query service. That's the user interface for the non-techies. Users will be able to annotate things. So they watch while watching the videos, they can make annotations on the timeline. I like this. This is wrong. Why is he wearing a yellow shirt? Whatever. You can also search, of course, for these annotations. So when preparing examines, you can go through things before, mark the important pieces, and then just search for them. We provide extensions here. It's an API for searching, a documented API. It's accessible using web services again. And we have live context plugins, so that you are able to maybe if you found a word or something, you could look it up and provide links to Wikipedia or some special dictionary. Distribution is more or less always the same, download and streaming. It depends on what you're encoding, of course. If you don't do streaming versions, you don't need a streaming server, obviously. We gather user statistics, which you can also access, of course. Just in the middle, there's sitting the manager. It's a special node trying to orchestrate things, looking that everything runs through the whole workflow, reporting errors, handling some special workflows like upgrading the archive, doing notification for system administrators, but also for lecturers to tell them that their lecture is now ready. It provides a management console for error tracking and an API, of course, for the whole workflow engine. So that was walkthrough through the system. Hope you got the idea. And now just a very, very quick and brief discussion about what this metadata is for that we are collecting. Everybody knows that metadata is very, very important, but few people know how to deal with it, how to leverage metadata. So our goal is to get away from the X 100 megabytes of data to valuable content. So we want to get into the video, and we want to turn videos into interactive learning objects. And in our view, this could look similar to this. This is the general thing, as you know. You have the movie player here. We have currently a picture-in-picture system. You can swap it. You can even get it full screen if you like. And here is more or less the interesting part. You're searching in the search field, and then you get a result list. And on this result list, you get marks of or indicating where your search term showed up within the videos. So, for example, you see here in the red one, the search term appeared here once on a short slide, and here it was discussed a little bit longer. So maybe this is a hit that I'm interested in. Once you select the video, you get the timeline again up here. You get markers for social annotations, for links that were provided, for attachments that were uploaded, and so on. In terms of campus integration, I already said that it's important to us to have this system spread. We want to have this spread. It was built for that. So this is the way all the way down. It's sorted according to technical capabilities. So you can just use what's around using the Acalender feeds to integrate your own recorders. You can very easily adapt workflows. You just know how to deal with the text editor, more or less. We are providing support for your user interface. If you don't like the one I showed before, and if you know how to deal with web services, you can build your own and just attach it. There are lots of documented APIs. Now it gets into coding, of course. Extensible functionality, various hooks where you can just add plugins, like the face recognition thing I talked about. And at the very, very bottom, and it's the basis for all of this, it's all built on standards. So you can, if you don't manage to hook in here, you can use standards to connect to our data, get it out, convert it to whatever you like. Timeline, and we are nearly finished. It's open source, as I said, as of today. You can download it. We have a beta version by this fall. We will start recording on a larger scale in September to find bugs. I don't think there are any, but my boss keeps telling me there will be. We'll do an extended testing period lasting until spring of next year. And then the system should be in a productive state in a version 1.0. We have lots of ideas how to proceed from there.